fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the program and a tremendous Tuesday to you. Give me a call right now, 1-888-914-9149. Only 2 days left until Thanksgiving, 888-914-9149. You can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And you can email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Yeah, lots to talk about today. Wow, I'm going to talk to you about how to deal with criticism, something that often comes up, maybe from time to time, with relatives that you might see over the holidays. Also, today is the feast of Pope Clement I. He's a really cool saint. He's not talked about enough, and he's got a lot to say about the primacy of the Roman Church, papal primacy. We talked about papal infallibility a few days ago. I'm going to tell you today how the life of Clement shows that the Bishop of Rome was, in fact, the leader of the church on earth, the leader of all the other bishops in the world. Some non-Catholics claim, oh, no, that's not the case. They're all just equals. No, that's not true. We're going to tell you how to counter that argument later on in the program. Plus, I have to ask you this. USA Today and some other outlets are reporting that for Thanksgiving, and unfortunately, you can't get one right now. They're all sold out. Reese's has created a gigantic pie, a peanut butter cup pie.
Inconceivable!
Yeah, and they're all sold out. Would you eat this? Would you eat this? I personally think it's amazing. It might be your last Thanksgiving ever if you eat this thing. There's a lot of calories, would this replace your pumpkin pie?
Kale. I would kale.
Patrick Alog says he would. Okay, so that's a vote for yes. I would too, man. I love Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, but we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that later. But right now, I want to talk about criticism. How do you deal with criticism? We all have critics, and social media has amplified that, and a lot of our critics are anonymous, internet trolls, that sort of thing. And we know the social statistics. We know that Facebook, for example, has been basically doing experiments on teen girls using Instagram and manipulating likes and news feeds, try to manipulate moods. And a lot of people live and die by critics in the social blogosphere and in real life too. Thanksgiving can be a time. Now, it's a double-edged sword, right? Getting together with family. Sometimes it's fantastic. Maybe there are no problems in your world. But for other people, it's not always a welcome thing to connect with relatives. There's always Aunt Bertha, and she's always got something to say about something. And so anyways, how do you deal with your critics? Well, I'm going to give you 7 tips for doing just that. And there's a biblical way to do this. And by the way, not all critics are bad. Not all criticism is bad. Bad for you, bad for me. Sometimes it can be something that God uses. So I want to know how you deal with critics. 1-888-914-9149. I read a really cool article by Lewis Allen over on Crossway. 7 tips for how to navigate criticism. And so one of the things that we have to understand is that all of us are criticized for something somewhere, sometime. I remember years ago, someone saying to me, if you don't want to be criticized, say nothing, do nothing, and be nothing. If you throw yourself out there in any way, and this doesn't mean just simply being a public figure. Obviously, if you're a public figure, if you're a politician, if you are involved publicly as the face of the church, if you're a bishop, if you're a priest, if you are, heck, even a radio show host, you're going to get critics. You're going to get critics. St. Jose Maria once said that you're not a dollar bill to be liked by everyone. Everyone likes to find a dollar bill on the road. Well, not everyone's going to like you, and everyone is going to have an opinion about you, and sometimes that might not be what you want to hear, but that's okay. That's okay. That's all right. Don't be surprised about this. It's part of life, and you can actually really grow in your faith through criticism. It's not to be avoided. This is one of the things that Lewis Allen says. It's not to be avoided. In fact, this is how God can change you if you respond well to it, and it might even help your critic at some level, so we'll talk about that. First thing he says, he gives 7 tips for how to deal with criticism. The first thing he says is that criticism is actually pretty biblical. It's pretty biblical. He says the people who love you will find ways to show you your errors and sins because Scripture actually tells them to. Scripture actually commands it. Look at Proverbs, the book of Proverbs. It's so rich. In Proverbs 27, verse 5, it says, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love." Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Because if somebody does criticize you, at least at some level, they care enough to do it. Now, what their motivation might be, you never know. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus says this in Matthew 18. This is a very, very important chapter. Jesus says, if your brother or sister sins against you, go and tell that person their fault between you and them alone. If they listen to you, you have gained your brother or sister. So the first thing you need to do if you have an issue with somebody, if possible, is try to talk to that person about it. If that doesn't work, he says, you know, bring another person with you so that everything can be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. And then if that doesn't work, bring this person to the church. And if they won't listen to the church, then you have to, you know, basically, you know, there are serious problems there. So that's what Jesus says. And one of the things that Lewis Allen says in his article is that if you're never criticized, if nobody ever criticizes you about anything, that is actually not a very good sign at all. That's not a good sign. That might mean that the people in your life actually don't care about you enough to challenge your mistakes or your weaknesses. Or maybe they want to, but they think, man, this person will never listen to me. If I bring something up, they'll fly off the handle. They won't take the criticism well. They'll try to justify themselves, and they get really, really defensive. So I'm just not going to engage. And that's a loss for you, because usually the people around you, the people who love you and care about you, they know the places, the areas in which you're struggling. So sometimes you need to hear this stuff, but they may not feel like they can give you this information. So that's something that we want to avoid as well. So there are times though when people criticize one another, there's a lot of stuff going on outside of the criticism. Whether or not the criticism is valid or not, it might be wrapped up in anger, or maybe some words that are thrown in there that are a little bit hurtful, that don't necessarily need to be part of it. So that you got to separate all that stuff from the message itself. And so what he recommends is, if the criticism is accurate, if you do need to hear this, if you do need to change, then thank God for it, and also thank your critic. That's a really hard thing to do. You know, one thing that we've really lost in the church over the last few decades is the art of fraternal correction, the art of actually caring enough about a fault in your brother or sister to point that out. And this should be done, you know, very sensitively and prayerfully, because whenever you point the finger at somebody, there's at least three fingers pointing back at you. And very often things that we get upset about in other people are things that we, in fact, are doing ourselves. And we see this trait in someone else, and it really bugs us, probably because we know that we're struggling with it too. And that could be on a subconscious level. Maybe we're not quite cognizant that we do this from time to time, but that could be part of it too. But praying about it before you make this fraternal correction, that's really, really important. If you have a spiritual director, it's good to check with them too, just to make sure that your motives are right, that you're not trying to just, you know, slap down the person, or you personally don't like them. You're actually trying to help them. If it's fraternal correction in the church, you're trying to help them be more Christ-like, trying to help them live out their baptismal vocation to holiness. So that's important. But if you do receive this kind of correction, you're supposed to say thank you. That's difficult too. That takes a lot of humility. That takes a lot of humility. Here's a proverb for you from the book of Proverbs, chapter 17, verse 10. A rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 blows into a fool. Wow. Okay, so some people, you know, they can get knocked around and they're still not going to get any sense knocked into them. A rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 blows into a fool. So if you have a sensitive heart, if you're a person of understanding, if you're a wise person, and tomorrow on the Faith Explained show, we're going to talk about being wise in the biblical sense of the word, right? What is biblical wisdom? What is the kind of wisdom that the prophet Daniel had? And he's kind of a model of wisdom. We're going to talk about that tomorrow on the Faith Explained show, 12:30 Central on Relevant Radio. But the book of Proverbs is very much a book of wisdom, how to have this practical wisdom, this biblical wisdom. And so that's a good one. You need to be a person of understanding so that when you get this correction, when you get this criticism, it's a valid criticism, it'll sink in. So that's the first thing. Criticism is biblical. If your motivation is good, if you're trying to help this person be a better person, be a better Christian, that is very biblical. To give it, to receive it. The second thing we need to understand, these seven tips about criticism, and I want to hear how you handle criticism. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. You have to acknowledge that it can hurt. Criticism can be hurtful. And especially if it's unfair. And we very often we can go back in our minds and press the replay button. Things that we've heard, hard words, harsh criticism, if it wasn't done in the right spirit, man, that can really sink in, and that can really make a lifelong impression on somebody. Like, imagine, you could probably think about it. I can remember times when I was criticized by teachers growing up, and maybe a teacher, because they're human, lost their temper and maybe said some harsh words, and I still remember those things, and it did hurt as a kid, and criticism when you're an adult can hurt as well. And sometimes, you know, burning words from others can sear themselves into your soul. But when you have a criticism that's delivered from a good place, that can actually stick with us in a different way, in a better way. Another proverb, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but an enemy multiplies kisses. That's something we should take heed of too. A friend who really cares about you is going to point out a problem, if there really is one. But somebody who really doesn't care, who maybe is using you, or maybe is an outright enemy, they might just be obsequious and tell you what you want to hear, try to kiss up to you a little bit. So profuse are the kisses of an enemy. An enemy multiplies kisses, but faithful are the wounds of a friend. So these are truthful words coming from a loving heart that can really challenge us to be better. So we do need friends. We do need friends who care about us enough to tell us hard truths. Anyways, this can be a disorienting process for us. The third thing that he mentions in his article, this is Lewis Allen's seven tips on how to take criticism. We can take it to our prayer. We can take it to our prayer. And he says there are two temptations that we have to face when we get criticized. The first temptation that we can kind of give into is that we can just say, no, this person's full of it, and just kind of reject it out of hand, forget about it, maybe speak ill of the person who's criticizing behind their back or to other people or just even within yourself. You know, this person is just nuts. How dare they say this? So that's one temptation, to just kind of outright reject it and reject the person who's giving it to you. Or you can also kind of bottle it up inside and say, man, this criticism really hurt me, and kind of wallow in this and say, you know, I'm going to harden my heart so that I'm impervious to criticism going forward. Neither one of these approaches is the right road. Neither approach is what God wants. And so he says, really what we've got to do is take this criticism and take it to God and pray about it. Why did this criticism hurt me so much? What was it about what this person said that was so hard for me to take? Maybe they were right, or maybe they were wrong, but you got to pray about it and ask God to show you how he wants you to think about this criticism. So you can't figure this out on your own. You need God's help to put it in the right perspective, because we have our human reactions, which are kind of visceral, and they may not always be right. So I want to hear your take on this. 888-914-9149, Scale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. The fourth tip, to understand that criticism will always change you. It'll always change you. So if you ignore, if you get in a place in your life where you're just constantly ignoring any correction that you might receive from a boss, from your spouse, from a friend, if you keep on ignoring valid criticism, because not all criticism is invalid, your heart can get really, really defensive. Your heart can get very hard, like Pharaoh's heart grew very hard. And your pride really kicks in. And every time you get criticized, you can put a new brick in your wall and say, I'm building up a defense mechanism. I don't want to hear it. And so this isn't your critics making you this way. It's your response to your critics. So the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 15, it says, see to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. So we can get bitter because of our critics. We don't want to be like that. There are lots of people walking around in churches that look like they've been baptized in lemon juice, right? They're just bitter. That's not going to evangelize. That's not going to draw people to Christ, the joy of the gospel. So we don't want that to happen to us. And I always think about, when I think about how to handle criticism, I always think about King David. There was a case in the Old Testament where this, you know, King David's royal procession is passing by and he's got all his guards and everything with him. And there's this guy on the side of the road, and he just starts spewing all this invective against King David and criticizing him and telling him what a jerk he is and blah, blah, blah. And the soldiers are like, my king, shall we just kill this guy? You know, do you want us to just do away with him? He's like, you know what? He might have some valid points that I need to hear. So he actually gets off his horse and listens to the guy. He might have been a little bit unhinged, but David was humble enough to say, this guy might be onto something here. Maybe he knows something that I don't. Maybe he has something that I need to hear. And so that's kind of a good approach for us to take as well. And so we need to ask for God's help to handle all this stuff. And our relationship with God should give us the strength and the confidence to be able to listen to it. If we're secure in who we are as God's children, we're baptized sons and daughters of the Father. We're in the royal court. You know, we're kids of the King. We're the King's kids. If we find our identity there, then in the unconditional love of God, then what other people say shouldn't bother us so much, because God already knows all of our faults. And maybe these people are right about some of these faults. Well, guess what? God already knows them. He still loves you anyways. He doesn't want you to stay that way. He loves you so much, he doesn't want you to stay where you are. He wants to make you more like his son, wants to make you a saint. And that can kind of have an effect too, that it doesn't bother us as much. We don't take it as personally. So that's a big point too. Point number five, these are the seven tips how to handle criticism. We might get some of this over the Thanksgiving dinner table from, you know, Uncle Goober or Aunt Bertha, I don't know. Anyway, so you can use criticism. This is a good one. You can use criticism to actually deepen your relationship with that person. Now, this is totally countercultural. This is real gospel living right here. So when we get criticized by somebody, our natural response is we want to pull back and not talk to this person. We want to kind of keep our distance from this person. This person has hurt me. They might do it again. I don't want to deal with them. But Lewis Allen says we've got to avoid at all costs this attitude, to retreat, to avoid this person. Even if they're a harsh critic, even if they're maybe a little bit off kilter, and maybe they're not being fair in their criticism of you. Because if they're that harsh, chances are that they themselves are really unhappy inside. If somebody's just kind of, you know, unloading invective against you and lashing out, that's a sign that they're not in a good place themselves. They're a hurting unit. And so at times these critics don't want to get to know you. They don't want to really have a relationship with you. They just want to complain about you. And they actually probably expect that you don't really want to know them either. Well, you could possibly prove them wrong. This is what Lewis Allen says. You could prove them wrong, because what your critics actually need is for you to engage with them. If possible, explore the criticism with them. They might want to, you know, give them a chance. Let's tell me more about this. Maybe they might want to add a few more things. That might hurt a little bit. They might have some more criticisms for you on top of what they've already said. But they might also say, you know, maybe I was being a little bit harsh to you. I might want to take back some of the things that I said to you. And that could be a good thing. That could be a painful interaction, but it can be a place where you can kind of build that relationship and maybe reconcile with this person and help them to grow if they're kind of not in a good place. And so this is something we really have to trust God on and really pray about. But it could be an opportunity for you to grow in that relationship with your critic. Number six, these are the seven tips for how to deal with criticism. You can make criticism a catalyst for being more like Jesus Christ. Think about this. Jesus, even though he was sinless, he was the sinless divine Son of God, he was free from sin, but he got criticized, even though there was literally no grounds for criticizing Jesus. People lied about him. They lied to him. They mocked him. They beat him. They spit upon him. They did all kinds of terrible things to him. Spread all kinds of calumny about him. He was criticized even by his friends. Think about a lot of his apostles were not. A lot of people think that one of the reasons why Judas betrayed him was because he didn't agree with Jesus' plan. And why are you, this perfume could have been sold and the money given to the poor. Well, of course, we know he was going to pocket it himself, but he was mocked by his friends. Even a lot of his family members, his extended family, thought he was out of his mind, it says in Mark's gospel. They tried to take charge of him. Who does he think he is? What's going on here? His friends abandoned him on the cross. He never retaliated, never retaliated. And as it says in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but he continued to entrust himself to him who judges justly. Can you do that when you're criticized? Can you actually entrust yourself to God, who really does know the truth about you? Can we follow the example of Jesus? We're going to have much more on this. I'm going to give you the last point, the seven tips for you when you're criticized. This might come up during the Thanksgiving holidays. You might come into some critical relatives and friends. How do you deal with it? I want to hear how you handle it. 888-914-9149 is Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. We are talking about seven ways that you can deal with criticism, whether just or unjust. And we could deal with it from a biblical perspective. Lewis Allen talks about this. And let me just run down where we've been so far. Tip number one, criticism is biblical. It's biblical. God calls us to do it, from a good motive. But we want to help people to grow and be better. Point number two, we have to acknowledge that it does hurt. It does wound our pride at times. And it can hurt us emotionally. Number three, we've got to take this criticism to our prayer. Got to pray about it. We've got to read the scriptures and say, you know, maybe there's some truth in what this person is saying. Point number four, understand that criticism will change you, will change you. The trick is not giving into the temptation to completely withdraw or demonize your critic. They may have some issues of their own, but let's look at the kernel of what's going on here. Point number five, you can use criticism to deepen relationships. You can actually try to engage your critic, see if they have more to say, and actually, a lot of these people are hurting units as well, and a lot of people want to criticize just for criticism's sake. We can befriend them, and we can help them, and be a friend to them. And then point number six, this is what we were talking about just before the break. We can make criticism a way for us to be more Christ-like. Jesus, although sinless, suffered a lot of unjust criticism. He was mocked, he was lied about, he was lied to, he was criticized by his enemies and his friends, and sometimes his extended family members as well. And so when we're criticized, especially when we're criticized for doing the will of God, for doing what is right, that shouldn't surprise us at some level. In fact, Peter tells us in his first letter, in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 14, he says, "If you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. Have no fear of them, nor be troubled." And so, if we are following Christ, we are going to come into conflict with all those and all those attitudes that kind of oppose his way of life and his truth. And so we're called to be meek. This is one of the things Lewis Allen says. We're called to be meek, but not weak. And what is meekness, right? Blessed are the meek. Meekness is power under control. Okay. And it doesn't mean that you let people walk all over you, but be Christ-like. Try to handle criticism the way Christ did. He entrusted himself and his cause to his Heavenly Father. And then the last point is that we can actually rejoice because Jesus is always on our side. He is for us. He is for us. And he wants to, you know, use this to make us more like him. And as one writer said, there is no sweeter fellowship with Christ than to bring our wounds and our sores to him. So we can tell him, you know, if it hurt when we got criticized, we can bring it to him. And he certainly understands what that's like. He understands the experiences that we go through, and he can help us. So how do you deal with critics in your life? How do you deal with criticism? We all get it. Sometimes it's anonymous trolls on social media. Sometimes it's friends and family, people that we really know and love. And their wounds can sting, but it can also be kind of medicinal too at times. How do you deal with it? 888-914-9149. We're going to go to the phones right now. John is calling from Concord, California. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hi. How are you doing
today?
I can now. Yeah, we had a little. Go ahead, John. Go ahead. You're on the air. We can hear you now.
Okay. So, just from my experience of kind of understanding the concept of love, and that you know, really, that is to a choice that I make. Right. Mm-hmm, there's nothing you can do that will change that. And if you can change it, then I really have never loved you. Love is something I choose to do. So if you have something to say that is, let's say, offensive, first of all, that's an emotional response. And so those only get about 3 seconds. After the 3 seconds of an emotional response, then I have to make a choice of to love or not. And so it's strictly a protection, and that's something other than you that has attacked you. And we recognize that. However, when we lean into that and ask, you know, tell me more, help me understand where that is. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is very disarming to the other person and is inquisitive and allows that person to bring that to you, which many times I've found is very helpful. And, you know, Jesus calls us to love. That's real simple. Connect with the repulsive. What is the hardest thing? And so if we find ourselves struggling, it's because you're on the wrong end of the lever, at least in my life. I'm trying to lift this, and I got my ego full-blown, exploding in my face, in my mind, in my body.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and do this with my teeth grit and you know, blood coming through my eyes here, just really upset. Relax. Relax.
Yeah.
And just let that happen. And if you feel you can't do it, you may be correct. You're not doing it. Just stay in. Don't try to do it. Just try it and stand there and listen.
Yeah.
And if it is overwhelming, realize you've got to let you're having an emotional reaction.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's
that's a great point, John. And it takes discipline to be able to listen to that criticism. And I like what you said too about not losing your connection with that person and trying to build that relationship. I appreciate that call. Thank you. That was John from Concord, California. Yeah, so some difficult conversations, some fun conversations also happen over the Thanksgiving table. But yeah, I'm sure that whenever we're in close quarters with people, there's always going to be a chance to correct others in fraternal correction and be corrected. So it's a lost art. I do think we should take advantage of it. To be sure, you're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Well, just before I jump into my next topic, I did see this article. Maybe you saw it too. USA Today reporting that Hershey has unveiled its largest Reese's peanut butter cup, and they've called it a Thanksgiving pie. And they had 3,000 of these things. It was kind of a limited run. They sold out in hours. Just so you know, it's 3.25 pounds of solid peanut butter and chocolate. I have always wanted bigger Reese's peanut butter cups. And by the way, I had a Halloween tweet, which I thought would go viral. I was sadly mistaken. It was about 95 Reese's. It was a picture of, remember Martin Luther? He touched off the Protestant Revolution. It was a huge mistake. But he wrote these 95 theses on the door of the Castle Church in Wittenberg and kind of nailed them to the door. And that touched off the Protestant Revolution. Well, Halloween was the day that that actually happened, October the 31st. And that's why Protestant Christians call it Reformation Day. Well, that was a revolution from our point of view that you know, certainly the church always needs reform, but let's reform from within. And that's what the Counter-Reformation was all about. But anyway, so I posted this picture. I didn't take the picture. It was of 95 Reese's, not 95 theses, nailed to the door. And it didn't go anywhere. I got a few likes, that's it. But at any rate, I'm totally down with this peanut butter cup pie. I don't know if you are, Patrick. I think you are too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Now realizing that it was 3.25 pounds, maybe that's a little too much. I'll have to go. I always plan to go to the gym Friday after Thanksgiving anyway, but maybe a pound.
Yeah, well, don't eat the whole thing in one sitting.
No, I won't.
So by the way, these pies were $45, $44.99 plus tax, and they're gone. Maybe you can buy one on eBay or something. Or you know.
Okay, now that you said the price, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I can use that $45 someplace else in a better place.
And by the way, this isn't the first time that the Hershey Company has done something like this. But they have more than, I didn't realize how big this company was, more than 90 brands around the world. They make more than $8.1 billion in annual revenue. That blew my mind. That's incredible. So they're responsible for Kit Kat, Jolly Ranchers, Icebreakers, all kinds of stuff. And they did, like I said, they have tried doing some other offshoots like this before. Apparently last December, I don't even remember this, Hershey launched something called Reese's Snack Cakes, and they were kind of advertising these as a mid-morning snack, like a coffee cake. So that's what you need, you know. And you need to be eating this stuff all day long, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And apparently this is not something I would partake in at all. In 2019, apparently they collaborated with Yuengling, the maker of beer. Yuengling and Hershey collaborated to make a chocolate porter ale. And apparently it was only available in 22 states. If you partook of this, I want to hear if it was any good. 888-914-9149. That's a toll-free line. That's not really important for you to call in about that. But I always feel like those types of fusions never really work out. I mean, chocolate and peanut butter is one thing. That's an awesome combination. But chocolate and beer, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I'm not a beer drinker myself, but I'm game for anything.
Well, here's
another
one.
You're talking to someone who ate Thanksgiving pizza. It had cranberries. It had the beans. It had the turkey. It had the gravy on it.
I think that's one of the signs of the apocalypse. That's got to be mentioned somewhere.
Let's just say
in
that I had a bad dream that night, though. Anything that was resulted from the food.
Yeah. Here's another. This isn't Hershey is not responsible for this one, but apparently this Christmas. You can get, coming up in Advent, you can get, Bud Light has announced that you can get an eggnog hard seltzer. That's, there's no way I would try this. You could not pay me enough to drink such a thing. I love eggnog. I would not drink an eggnog seltzer. No way. Forget about it. Not going to happen. Anyway, so if you were one of the lucky ones one of the 3,000 Americans who were able to obtain the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup Thanksgiving pie, congratulations. I hope you enjoy it. Please post a picture of it. Tag me on Twitter at Cale Clark. Tell me if it was any good. And maybe next year I will be blessed and I'll get one. But like I said, if you eat it, it might be your last Thanksgiving. I don't know. There's a lot of calories there. There is a lot of calories there. Well, I'll tell you what, we're gearing up for Thanksgiving, but that's not the only feast I'm thinking about today. Today is also the feast day of Pope Clement. And you've heard of Clement. If you don't know Clement, you at least have heard about him through the Eucharistic prayer, right? He's in Eucharistic prayer number one. I mean, it kind of goes through the popes, Linus after Peter, right? Linus, Cletus, Clement. right? So who was Clement? Now, Clement is really, really important, by the way, for us in our understanding of the papacy in the early church. He wrote a famous letter to the Corinthian church, just like St. Paul wrote a letter to the Corinthians. And this is crucial for establishing the fact that the papacy, the Bishop of Rome, he had authority over other bishops of the world. This isn't some later development that the Catholic Church invented. Not the case at all. So just to lay this out, by the way, and you're listening to the K.O. Clark Show, 888-914-9149. If you have a question or comment about this, you can call in. 888-914-9149. You can also email the program, comments, questions, Kale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Or you could tag me on Twitter, at Kale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And yeah, so here's what the fathers of the church said about Clement of Rome. By the way, Stephen Ray, who's a Catholic convert, he's written a really nice book on the papacy that I really like. It's called Upon This Rock. It talks about the papacy in the early church, published by Ignatius Press. And the fathers of the church, they note exactly who this guy was. Now, he's the third bishop of Rome after Peter, as I just mentioned. Remember, Peter was martyred about the year AD 67, maybe 68, under the crazed Emperor Nero. Remember, I don't know if most historians, but a lot of them think that he himself burned down the city of Rome. Well, he fiddled on the roof, and then he blamed it on Christians and unleashed this wicked persecution, claimed the life not only of St. Peter, but also of St. Paul. So remember, there was Peter first, and then after his martyrdom, Anacletus, or Cletus, and then Clement. And here's what a writer named Eusebius, who wrote really one of the first histories of the church, in the year 325 AD, so this is around the time of the Council of Nicaea. So here's what Eusebius wrote in the year 325. He said, Clement, who was appointed the third bishop of Rome, was, as Paul testifies, his co-worker and his fellow soldier. That's right. St. Paul might actually mention this guy in Philippians chapter 4, verse 3. And then St. Irenaeus, who's also a great apologist of the Catholic faith, in the second century, he said this, the blessed apostles, having founded and built up the church, committed into the hands of Linus the office of the episcopate. Of this Linus, Paul makes mention in the epistles to Timothy. To him succeeded Cletus, and then after him, in the third place from the apostles, Clement was allotted the bishopric. He was made a bishop, in other words. This man had seen the blessed apostles and had been conversant with them. He might be said to have the preaching of the apostles still echoing in his ears and his traditions before his and their traditions before his eyes. Nor was he alone in this. There were many still remaining who had received instructions from the apostles. So St. Irenaeus wrote this in his masterwork called Against Heresies, or Against the False Teachings. So a lot of people think that Clement himself was actually ordained by Peter, and then eventually he becomes the Bishop of Rome following Peter, the third bishop, so Linus, Cletus, and then Clement. So really, really important. So one of the things that's important about him was that he really does give us a great early look at papal primacy. And let me just read a little bit about the situation. So now a lot of people think this letter that he wrote to the Corinthians was in 96 AD, but a lot of people think it was even earlier than that. In fact, this guy passed away, but there was a scholar named Monsignor Thomas Heron. Father Thomas Heron was Monsignor. He wrote a book about the dating of Clement's letter, and he actually thinks it was written long before 70 AD, long before the destruction of the Jerusalem temple. Now, that's important because it's not super important, but the earlier the letter was written, the better, because it shows that, yeah, this was a thing really, really early on in the church. So there is a problem in the Corinthian church, and that shouldn't surprise you, because if you read 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, you know this church had serious issues. We had a whole series about the Corinthian church called Saints and Sin City. It was part of our Faith Explained series. You can check that out on the podcast archives at relevantradio.com and the Relevant Radio app. You can stream those. I don't know how far back they go on the app, but you can certainly get them from the website. And St. Paul dealt with the Corinthian church. Well, they still had issues long after Paul's day. And Clement had to write to them to tell them to get their act together. So what were they doing? Well, basically they had basically rejected their bishops and had kind of gone rogue. Now, what's weird about this, because a lot of people want to say, oh, you know, the Bishop of Rome wasn't a big deal. A lot of non-Catholics say he was just another bishop. Well, there was an actual apostle that was still alive at the time, and he was in the town next door, and he's not the guy who dealt with the problem. It was the Bishop of Rome, even though he wasn't one of the original 12 apostles. We're going to talk about that after the break. 888-914-9149. You are listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back.
It's one of the busiest travel days of the year and probably one of the busiest grocery shopping days as well. Do you have your boarding pass printed out? Did you remember the cranberries? We'll help you get through the Wednesday before Thanksgiving on the next morning air here on Relevant Radio. Great guests lined up for you as well. We'll take a look at the first Sunday in Advent, the Gospel reading with Bishop Daniel Muggenberg, and the latest from Rome with our Rome correspondent, Ashley Nerona. That plus my all-time favorite Thanksgiving story corner. All coming up on the next morning air right here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
You rescued me. Hey, welcome back to the program. Call 1-888-914-9149. Talk to me toll free, 888-914-9149. We're talking about Pope Clement. It's his feast day today, and a lot of people don't know too much about him. Well, he wrote a very famous letter to the Corinthian church. And the Corinthian church, as was their wont, they had gone off the rails yet again. St. Paul dealt with them, and Clement had to as well. And St. Irenaeus, who's a great writer in the early church, Irenaeus of Lyon in modern-day France, he wrote, "In the time of Clement, no small dissension having occurred among the brethren at Corinth, the church in Rome dispatched a most powerful letter to the Corinthians, exhorting them to peace, renewing their faith, and declaring the tradition which it had lately received from the apostles." And they actually listened to Clement. The Corinthians didn't say, hey, you have no right to talk to us. We're not going to listen to you. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing. But it's a very authoritative letter, and you can look at it. You can Google it. You can read this letter. It's Clement's first letter to the Corinthians. And when he wrote this letter, the apostle John was still alive. He was the only one of the 12 who wasn't martyred, and he was still alive, and in all likelihood, he was in the next city over in Ephesus, and tradition says that's where he was. It was only 240 miles away from Corinth. So why was John not writing this letter as an actual apostle? The apostle Jesus loved, he was kind of his right-hand man, along with Peter. He's one of the inner circle, Peter, James, and John. Why wasn't John? Hey, John, can you help us with this problem? It's the Bishop of Rome, even though he wasn't one of the 12, even though he's third after Peter. You know, Peter, Linus, Cletus, Clement, right? And so, by the way, this letter that Clement wrote was considered to be sacred scripture by a lot of people. I mean, the church eventually ruled on the canon of the New Testament. How many books can make it into the New Testament? 27. We have the same number of books as Protestants do, obviously, in the New Testament. They took some books out of the Old Testament, but it didn't make it into the New Testament in the end, First Clement. But what's really wild is that if you go to the British Museum, they have a copy of the oldest complete Bible that's ever been found, and it's called the Codex Alexandrinus, and that contains the Old and the New Testament, and in that Bible, which is the oldest complete Bible that has all the books of the Bible, guess what else is in there? The letter of Clement to the Corinthians. It was held in really, really high regard. And in the Alexandrian Codex, it was actually considered part of the New Testament. So that should give you, now it didn't make it in the end, but that should give you some idea about how the early Christians viewed this letter. And so anyways, you can read more about this. You can kind of do your own homework on this if you want. But if you actually read the letter, here's a quote from Pope Clement. This is what he says. And basically what these guys were doing in the Corinthian church was they had kicked out their duly appointed bishops, and they were appointing their own leaders, and they'd kind of gone rogue. And so this is what Clement says. "We deem it an injustice to eject from the sacred ministry the persons who were appointed by the apostles, or later by their followers." So this is what he says. This is wild. This is really powerful. He says, "Receive our counsel, and you shall have no occasion of regret. For as God lives, and as the Lord Jesus Christ lives, and the Holy Spirit, so surely shall he who with lowliness of mind and instant in gentleness has..." He goes on and says a few other things. "If certain persons should be disobedient unto the words spoken by him," by Jesus Christ, "through us, let them understand that they will entangle themselves in no slight transgression and danger, but we shall be guiltless of this sin." So basically, Clement is saying, Jesus Christ is speaking through me right now, and I'm the leader of the church, and you guys got to get your act together. And by the way, they actually did it. They actually did it. They did not fight with him, and they actually... They heeded the Pope's words. There was no protest from anybody. Nobody in the early church said, "Hey, he has no right to do this. He's just another bishop. You know, why we have our bishops. Rome has their bishop. Ephesus has John the Apostle. But this guy has no right to do this." No, they never said that. They actually, not only did they do what the Pope said, that letter was read at Mass for a long time afterwards. They loved it so much. And some people actually thought it should be in the Bible, as we talked about just a couple of moments ago. So that's Pope Clement. It's a really, really good argument from the early church for the primacy of the Bishop of Rome, the Pope. Really, really important stuff on that. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to the phones right now. Sorry, but my computer just went on a blank. Hang on for 1 second. I'm going to log back in. Here we go. Okay, we're going to go to Paul in Youngstown, Ohio. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Cale. I have a hobby on Saturdays. I like to sit down and watch a video called Pints with Aquinas.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Matt Frad.
It's hosted by a Catholic, Matt Frad.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a very interesting video. He had a knowledgeable Catholic layman debating a knowledgeable Orthodox priest from New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
And they got really in-depth. They talked councils and canons way, way back before Nicaea, I believe.
Wow.
And very, very good. It's also my understanding that bishops could exhort each other in a church. And their influence would be recognized, regardless maybe if it was Rome or Antioch or Jerusalem. But anyways, if you haven't seen the video with Father Patrick Ramsey, you might want to tune in over the long weekend and pour a pint of something to drink and enjoy the video.
Well, thanks for mentioning that, Paul. I'll try to check that out because I think Matt Frad is a great guy. He's doing some really, really good work, and that would be a conversation I'd like to listen to. I'd really like to listen to that. And I think there's some great prospects for reunification between some of the Orthodox churches of the East and the Catholic Church. And this is something that the church has been pushing for a really, really long time. And who knows, we may see some of this in our lifetime. Obviously, when we talk about the Orthodox churches, it's not one group. There are many Orthodox churches, Coptic Orthodox, Ethiopian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, as we know, so many. And obviously, they're all kind of operating autonomously. And so who knows, some of them may be reconciled to Rome. And so, yeah, I think Clement is part of the, you know, it's one of the pieces of the puzzle. It's not the only piece that talks about the authority of the Bishop of Rome in the early church, but it's pretty crucial because it's early. And so thanks very much for the call, Paul, and very happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. That was Paul calling from Youngstown, Ohio. All right. How much time do we have left, Patrick? Not too much, I don't think. 2 minutes. Okay. I have to share with you a miracle moment. And this is an incredible email that I got from Elizabeth, who's listening in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And very recently, we had our pledge drive for Relevant Radio, our fall pledge drive. And here's what Elizabeth said, who called in and donated during the Cale Clark Show. She said, "I'm sending this to as many of you as I can to be a witness to God's goodness. My family began listening to Relevant Radio frequently just before COVID hit in March of 2020. Became our virtual parish, provided us with such hope. We became members of the St. Joseph Recurring Gift Society about a year ago. This past pledge drive, I listened to many of the programs and heard stories from listeners. I thought about making an additional donation, but things seemed to be going well for Relevant Radio, and as I paid our own household bills, I felt a little uneasy about giving extra, but I couldn't shake this feeling of wanting to do more. So we decided to make a donation. When I got home from school on Friday, I hit the submit button with my donation and I said, 'Jesus, I trust in you.' The very next day, my whole family participated in a walk to support mothers in need. And after the day's events, there was a raffle. Would you believe that we won a gift card in the exact amount of our donation? If this isn't incredible enough, I decided that I would give the gift card to the crisis pregnancy home that I work with. Again, I felt the nudge of the Holy Spirit to do something with this money. And I went forth saying, 'Jesus, I trust in you.' So later that week, I dropped off the gift card, knowing that our director would use it to help mothers get formula, diapers, some other necessity. And a day later, my husband called me. She says, on the way home from work, he beat me home, and waiting at our door was a gorgeous nativity set that we won from Relevant Radio. We were speechless, and we can't wait to light it up right after Thanksgiving. And we'll send a picture to the family rosary across America. That's incredible.